that for the purposes of learning from this experience, because this is the grandest example we've had in the United States. And I think we're at a point now where the going's going to start getting real tough. You can't pick up thousands of barrels a day. You can't show ready examples of dirty versus clean. This thing is in gradients of good, bad, and worse, you know, back and forth. And my concern is, and it's the same concern I had in May, is that the Coast Guard, Admiral Lusk, fully understand the position of trust that they're in from the public. And that's really the gauge. I don't know many other federal agencies that have been thrust into a position of such high visibility and emotionalism as the Coast Guard currently is. Certainly not in peacetime. I don't know when that's happened. And this is an accident. This is an incident which, to me, and we'll go more into this later, but, you know, as I said earlier, is a systems failure. And this is to me, an environment that is comparable to the Challenger. It's comparable to Three Mile Island. And at some point, the Coast Guard's reputation is going to be right there on the line because of some difficult, tough calls that Admiral Robbins and Admiral Yost and you and others are going to have to make. But I think what is clear is that the Congress has clearly established, I think you heard it here, you heard it in the Senate the other day, on a bipartisan basis, you're our negotiator. You're representing us, you're representing our constituents, you're representing the President of the United States. This isn't partisan. It's flat out on the table, and the question is the restoration of Prince William Sound and the surrounding areas. And I just hope that as we get into the difficult task of determining what is complete, and I think Admiral Yost stated out, don't expect that this will be done next summer either. That is the task that the Coast Guard has. That's what's central. That's the trust process. Exxon can argue until it's blue in the face on one side of that issue, and Mr. Kelso can argue until he's blue in the face on the other side of that issue. But the determination, the responsibility is with the Coast Guard at this point. We may want to change that law. You may want out of this after this experience, you know, give it to somebody else. But right now, that's where the law sits. It's the only law we have governing this spill. And it's tough, and it's meant to be, and it's also meant that some tough decisions are going to have to be made. Exxon's decisions to comply or not comply are theirs to make. They have suggested here that we can expect that compliance. Others see it other ways. We'll let that stand. But I think it's just very important that come clear. I think it was clear in the Senate hearings and here, too, that this is recognized as a difficult and tough task, much tougher than we had envisioned, and that the Coast Guard is in the position of the public trust at this point. And that's a statement you can respond if you'd like, but I just think, I hope you will carry that away from this hearing. Just as Exxon has said that this is a test of their company and how they respond to this spill, they said, We should take this as a test. The public should understand that. Those are big charges, even for a company the size of Exxon, to put this oil spill and put your company credibility in how you address these kinds of problems is a very, very difficult charge, and not one that's easily made. And as we've clearly seen in the last couple hours, and certainly over the last several days, not one that you can even appear to look like you're walking away from. And that's not easy. And there's not a lot of corporations that would take that task on. And people have said and commented that, you know, we're very fortunate. If we're fortunate, you're not, Stevens. That perhaps that in this particular case that it was Exxon as opposed to some fly-by-night operation that wouldn't belly up to the bar and pay the freight to the extent that you have today. And that's also a subject for further hearings. But I just think that we've got to understand that if the public believes or you believe that this is going to be resolved by whether or not you can stand by 800 miles of beaches or 600 mile beaches, we've missed the point here. We're talking about a total environment. And we've seen that most of the phrases we were using in May are not working today. You know, And I think that the Congress ought to be aware of that, and certainly the Coast Guard ought to be aware of that. Let me ask, if I might, an additional question here, Mr. Stevens, and that is, a number of my colleagues have asked me this, and I dare say I've not been able to respond as thoroughly as I might. And that is over the incident of what apparently was an accidental purge of computers, of the of documents. If you can outline for us, because I've been asked more times than I care to what took place here.
Caption summary: Much Ado About Nothing. And I see the Attorney General of the State of Alaska, so I'll have to mark my words carefully. This is a backup system to the computer systems that we run in terms of interoffice communications. The use of the system, and it's common in industry generally, is only for incidents where the primary storage devices, be they tape or disk, computer disk, get destroyed for some reason, a fire, a major electrical surge, or something like that. And these tapes are used to restore the system, and therefore the tapes are constantly being updated so you can restore to a very recent date. Again, a very common practice in industry generally. With a court order, requiring document retention, we took a safe course of action, which was to retain those tapes. Subsequently, the court amended their order and said we didn't have to retain those tapes anymore. Yet, there was an intervening period when we were doing it, and we decided we would save them, and an employee, contrary to well-documented and expressed instructions, inadvertently, accidentally, I don't know what term, destroyed some of them, a very small proportion.
Destroyed the tapes or the documents?
The tapes. There has been no destruction of documents.
So that the body, because I guess again, sometimes we have to deal in perceptions and short news clips, but a number of my colleagues were concerned that in fact, the body of knowledge, the documents,
no.
The notes, the memos, what
no.
have you, around that immediate time
no.
after the spill was lost. That is not the case.
No.
Okay. Well, thank you very much. Admiral Yost, let me just clarify one other point here Lusk. In what our expectations should or should not be. Admiral Yost said in the Senate the other day, last week, that he wanted this cleanup to go as late as it possibly could, and there. That suggested, I think, in his that there, I would want to see the work done as late as it can be done, and if some of the major equipment had to be demobilized on said schedule, even if some of the equipment. So, at least that suggests to me, and I think again to the senators that this is going to be a phased process, and. Is that your understanding, Mr. Stevens, that we're now... let me ask you this. I understand from your earlier testimony, should I be comfortable here that this is a matter of negotiations that are now being undertaken between Exxon and the Coast Guard as opposed to the Harrison memo, that this question of what happens around mid-September, September 15th?
I'll say yes if you'll never use the term the Harrison memo again, Mr. Chairman. What can I say? What can I say? Seriously.
No, I think, you, and I, the reason I'm asking because the second part of the question is, Mr. Kelso looked like this was all sort of news to him in terms that this may be, that these negotiations have now been elevated to the level that they will result in some kind of concrete written understanding as to how this demobilization will take place. what do we know about this?
Well, from our standpoint, the studies are still underway, and I would accept that Mr. Harrison and Admiral Robbins have possibly had some discussions. I, to my knowledge, could not use, applying to today, the word negotiation, because the studies are still underway.
But will this be, let me ask you, Admiral S., will this be the subject again of a plan of demobilization? Will you have to present, will we have a written document that the Coast Guard signs off on for the demobilization of the cleanup effort?
Admiral Robbins told me that Mr. Harrison had discussed what date they were going to submit, they, Exxon, were going to submit the written document for
proposal for their,
yes,
their plan.
And there was some discussion about what might be in that, but they didn't have it in hand.
I understand. I understand that that may be.
There was going to be a written proposal.
You then, what's your role in that, Mr. Kelso, representing the state?
There will be a draft plan, according to Mr. Harrison and Mr. Kuntz, no later than August 11th, and we will certainly look at that and advise the federal on-scene coordinator. One of the things we hope that that plan will address, and I must say that we don't have any indication that it will, is not only phasing out, but also retaining equipment and a level of presence sufficient to do emergency response, for example, in Prince William Sound.
Is the state working on a proposal that they will also be submitting to the Admiral for consideration?
We will be identifying specific tasks that we think should be done during the fall, during the winter, and then as a foundation for getting going again in the spring.
And I would assume that then the Admiral's got to distill all this down from both parties and carry it out. And the reason I raise it is again, back to the July 24th Exxon press release, which says, we do not intend to work on the shoreline cleanup past mid-September. That may be your statement of intent, but I assume we no longer consider that a unilateral statement of what will happen, because that's yet to be determined by the Coast Guard through these negotiations.
Mr. Chairman, as I hope I made abundantly clear earlier, the word unilateral is applied to Exxon's actions right since Good Friday is non-applicable.
Good. See, we're getting closer here.
I misspoke.
It's good to see you haven't lost your sense of humor, Mr. Stevens. Yes, Mr. Kelso.
Mr. Chairman, we're encouraged to hear what I think is more flexibility in these matters from Mr. Stevens, our offer stands to continue working cooperatively. We think that there's a lot that can be done jointly here. One of the things we hope that Exxon will consider now as we look at the winter is that areas like Kodiak and Cook Inlet are very different than Prince William Sound. The weather data that you saw summarized on the chart are for Prince William Sound, not these other areas. And the ability to continue doing some work, as long as safety considerations allow, late into the fall or into the winter, ought to be given serious consideration in whatever plans are put together.
Well, I think that that was, I think, could reasonably be read into to Admiral Yost's statement to Senator Kerry and Senator Stevens that, as he said out, he expects this to go on as long as it can. I had another question for you, Admiral Lusk, but you know what? It's vanished somewhere here.
I'd lucked out.
Damn it, I know I had a question for you.
You know, I might say you
wait. Oh, I know what it is.
Okay.
Politician without a question, huh? The rub that has been raised a couple of times by Commissioner Kelso, I think, is a very important one, and I think it's probably very important. Could obviously be important to other people, and that is in the determinations of what is complete, not complete. He's raised several times the notion that state law, in some instances, may be stricter than federal laws. Is that fair, Mr. Kelso, what you might be saying to us? You have to remove contaminants.
Well, state law applies in some instances when there is
what
no
role does that
applicable
play in these deliberations? I know representing a coastal state, if we were into this kind of situation, I'd be very concerned, as my local representatives would be, that state law not be ignored in this plan. To what extent does that have to be factored in under the law?
Well, certainly.
We've
done our best not to ignore state input in any of the 8,800 spills we handle over here.
That's part of the equation, what compliance with state law would...
This is something that's implicit. You can see from Mr. Kelso's demeanor that he's not one that can be pushed aside too easily, and I assure you that we wouldn't try. But we do try to get their input, and we do try to cooperate, and their input is certainly factored in. On the other hand, it is going to be the federal on-scene coordinator who makes a decision. And when that decision is made, if the state isn't happy with it, despite the fact that they've had input, then they can take whatever recourse they want. I wouldn't suggest what that recourse might be. But the responsibility of my agency is to get their input and try to factor it in and do something with it. I hope that they would agree with the decision was made. They have so far, I understand.
Okay. Well, it obviously poses some interesting, serious legal questions after the fact. One, how does the state discharge its obligation with respect to carrying out the state laws? And at what point does the state have to come back, even after there's been a federal sign-off on the cleanup, some time in the distance, and still try to get compliance with state law? But I guess we can't solve everything here this morning. Ms. Kelso?
Mr. Chairman, we view this as really just a difference in the roles that the Coast Guard and the state have. It isn't a conflict. It's simply a difference, and the two of them fit together because the state has jurisdiction over the lands that have been affected here, and we have state statutes and regulations that apply. The Coast Guard has a role in carrying out, directing the activity designed to remedy those problems. So the state standards, the state requirements, in our view, still apply, and we'll work with the federal on-scene coordinator to make sure they get accomplished. I think the policy implications of this for the future are that, and I know this is on your mind as you think about your legislation, are that we need to make sure that we don't, in the future, end up in a situation where the spiller is in a position to determine what the standards are or how long to continue doing the work. I'm not suggesting that Exxon will operate in bad faith here, but rather that right now there is still that little gap between the authority to direct on the part of the Coast Guard and the authority of the ability of the spiller to say, well, that's all very interesting, but we've decided that we're going to do it a different way. That's something that in legislation does need to be corrected, and in the process of doing that, it's important not to preempt state law.
Well, I think that
you're sensitive to
the whole notion about the management of these spills from the beginning to the end has been called into question in terms of rights and responsibilities of parties, and given what we saw in the first week here, I think clearly many, many members of Congress have raised those issues, and they will be addressed in both the oil spill liability and prevention legislation that's anticipated for the fall of this year. But I think that is something that genuinely concerns us very much. Believe it or not, I've run out of questions. I don't know if you have anything you would like to add, either anybody here.
No, I appreciate the confidence that you and the rest of Congress have given us in giving us this charge, which you've quite aptly described as being a rather complicated and sometimes likely to be a no-win one. But we're not going to duck from it. I assure you, we don't need to be reminded of our responsibilities. We had a medal struck very recently with the authorization of the Congress, and that medal's to be used starting next Friday, which is the beginning of our bicentennial year. So we're somewhat used to being put in awkward positions, sir, and I assure you we'll do our best.
Thank you. Thank you very much for your for your time. All right.
That's good.
Well, we took it as far as we could take it, right?
I can introduce
him.
Sign it.
Oh, good.
I have to sign both of the
What did we vote on, guys?